Can you see Daniel as a sales guy? Daniel would be going, you don't want to buy anything, do you? Let's just go. I bet when he was dating, he'd do the same thing. You don't really want to go out with me, do you? I know, honestly. That sounds just like me. I'll tell you the truth. When I got married to my wife, my brother proposed to Londa for me. It was the craziest thing in the world. He said, I really want you to marry my brother. I hadn't even proposed. And she goes, well, I would if he would ask me. He says, I'm asking you. I'm begging you. Just like that. It's just crazy. Oh, man. Left on my own devices, I was going to mess that up too. We almost got it done, guys. Thanks for your patience. And if your little skinny rear is like mine, you're done setting for the day. And we've got a couple of little dots, and then we're going to do a little question and answer. And let me tell you the dynamics around this question and answer thing while you guys are passing that stuff around. It's a funny thing. Some guys feel real comfortable asking questions, and some guys don't feel comfortable asking questions, and it is not a problem at all. We'll be here the rest of the weekend, and we'll be glad to answer anything that we possibly can. Nobody set me up as Guru Myers. There's a lot of things that I just don't know. And every time we do this, and I've done this all over the world, this thing about asking questions, and there's always somebody that comes up with something that's just out in left field, and you go, I don't know, maybe I need to give the money back. I don't know the answer to the question. I really don't. And I'm not the least bit shy about telling you. If I've not run across it, we'll call Cliffy and he'll know. We'll get back with you and do that. The stuff that Peter was talking about, I want to connect a couple of real quick things, just add a little piece to that 8 and 9 stuff that we were talking about. This amends thing is really pretty funny. There's also another reason. We do this stuff because the book asks us to do it and so that we can be a maximum service to God and the people about us. The book is clearly asking us that. But the book, the funny part about this stuff is, imagine a scenario where I'm sitting here trying to get Daniel to do an amends. I said, Daniel, you got 11 names on this thing and we need to get you through this work to this amends process as quick as we can. And we talk about it and this sort of thing, and then Daniel finds out that I have 5 amends of my own that I haven't made. Now, immediately what we're faced with is this situation where I become a hypocrite. I'm sitting there trying to stand on Daniel's neck, trying to get him to see what he needs to see and trying to get him to do this stuff, and I haven't even done my own. And so if you're even remotely interested in sponsorship, there should be another piece of impetus to get out there and go finish these dadgum amends. You're fighting a battle called an ego that's telling you, I've already done enough of it. Remember, is there anything that we do in AA that we don't do under duress? It's all about pain. Pain makes us stop drinking. Pain makes us admit where we are. Pain makes us want to go make the amends. It's about pain. And it's a funny thing around the amends process. Let's say I got 10 amends and I've made 5 and they're the big ones and the other 5 are not so big. And it's a funny thing. I can feel the blowtorch backing off my rear end. Now there's no real pain. My head has justified this stuff. Well, he was a jerk anyway, and he was in it. I'm trying to rationalize this from an ego standpoint. I'm trying to rationalize this. Peter was talking about this stuff before, but it's an amazing thing how easy it is to sell yourself on the idea that I don't really have to make that other 5 amends. I don't really have to. Especially you older dudes. Especially you guys like me, who have been around for a few years, it's really easy to go, it was 20 years ago. They're dead. They're whatever. It's always this deal of rationalizing in our head. We don't want to do that. It makes us a phony. It makes us a hypocrite. And it's not a good place to start a spiritual foundation. So we want to go ahead and try to clear that stuff up as we can. One other thing is that this deal about an amends process, is there any of you guys that don't remember the first day that you were in AA and maybe there were some of these little lampshade things on the wall and you're sitting down there and you're reading down the list and you go, okay, I could do that, I could do that, I could... Inventory? I don't think I could do that. And I mean, we're just kind of running it through a mental deal through our head, you know, trying to get our gourd to assimilate everything that's there. And we get down to this thing about amends and we go, absolutely not. See, we're coming from a perspective as an unrecovered alcoholic making decisions on what we will do and what we won't do. That defiance thing that we were talking about a minute ago plays a big part in that. I will do this, I won't do this, I will. And it's a funny thing. for a lot of us, we never realize that the special part of that particular step is that there's not just me facing a guy that I've screwed over. There's not just me and a guy that I've got to make an amends to. It's me, this guy I messed over, and God. And it's huge. It's huge. It's like trying to explain to somebody about sex. Did anybody ever tell you about sex before you had sex? Come on, somebody did. On a schoolyard or sitting out behind a building someplace or sitting around. Somebody told you about it and you went, I'm gonna have to do that. That sounds pretty cool, you know? And then somebody takes pity on you and you do this or whatever, I don't know. But you're in that situation. I forget that the whole world's not pathetic like me. Somebody actually wanted to do it with some people, but I mean, I'm just like, I'm a beggar. Please do this. I'm begging you. And so somebody finally did, and I'm just like going, holy cow. That's what they were talking about. And this process of an amends, when I'm talking to you about an amends and you have not been through the process or you've only been through it on a superficial basis, it's this intellectual thing that we're talking about. I can talk about an amends process having God in the middle of it all day long. I can talk about it till the cows come home. But until you've experienced it with you and another person that you messed over and God in the middle of a relationship, and you watch that relationship shift and heal as you talk, then you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like connecting the dots, and it's just an amazing kind of a deal. You understand that this process of doing 10, 11, and 12 that we're going to talk about in the morning, we're supposed to do 10, 11, and 12 while we're doing these amends. You show me a man or a woman that tries to make amends without doing 10, 11, 12 at the same time, and I'll show you a powerless situation that's more intellectual in nature and less right here in the gut. And it's a scary place to be. The amends tend to be very stiff and very timid and very precarious because we don't ever know where they go. If they go okay, we're okay. If they go down the toilet, we're there on our own. Any of you guys have to make amends twice because you did one and it went south because you didn't know what you were doing, and then you came back in, you worked through the work again, and then you went back out and had to make that same amends again? And to see the difference between the two amends, it's almost worth doing it just to see what it's like, because it's an no, let's don't do it. It's really pretty terrifying to watch this amends that you wanted to make go start sliding down the toilet and you can't stop it. She says something and pushes that button and you go, listen, and your face is getting red and you're just, and pretty soon you guys are like nose to nose again. And I'm going, you know, like, remember the key here on this amends deal is that we still have buttons that can be pushed. We shouldn't. What you say or what you think is of no importance. It's not important. And we need to get our lives to that particular place to where we can be okay and comfortable in our own skin. If I'm all the time looking at you, waiting for confirmation of whether you like me, do you dig me, do you not dig me, it's a horrible way to live. And yet, all of us live that way as drunks, and a lot of us live that way in sobriety, and it's a very uncomfortable way to live. Always wondering, do they approve? Do they like me? You got to get clear of that stuff. We're going to talk about that some tomorrow, especially in the morning, about this stuff in 10, 11, and 12, and get into that. Let's do this question stuff, and then in the meantime, tomorrow we'll talk about some of this. I want to add one real quick thing before we get into this question thing. We touched on it last night when I was talking, and I want to make sure that everybody is really, really clear about this deal. I know that there is controversy around conferences sometimes, and there's controversy about working the work out of the big book and big book studies and a lot of this stuff. I know that it seems to ruffle feathers. At the end of your day, you still have the decision to make about whether or not you want to embrace this way of living or whether you don't want to embrace this way of living. It's proven successful for a whole bunch of us. It's not about trying to transform men and women into a bunch of goofy big book guys, whacking guys up in meetings. I mean, let me ask you seriously, just between me and you guys, is there anything more repulsive than a big book guy in a meeting that wants to whack guys up the side of the head and crucify them with a big book? You ever sit in a meeting with a guy like that that wants to just take hostages? It's just an ugly thing. And people look around you, you know, and they kind of go like, I don't know, what's with this guy? You know, I mean, that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is get to a place to where we understand enough of the literature that we can begin to have an experience with a loving God so that we can get out there and what? Have a better life? Well, yes, but that's not the reason. It's so that we can get out there and help somebody without the anxiety and the fear that we carry into 12-step work. It's about understanding who we are and what we are so that we can transmit that to somebody else. The guys, when they wrote the big book, understood real quick. You know what? I think they were all surprised. We could actually transmit this to somebody else through the literature itself. And there are lots and lots of drunks that got sober and did the steps just reading the book, just right there by themselves. You can do this. You see? It's a lot nicer if you've had a sponsor who's had a spiritual experience to help guide you through this. It's a much more enjoyable process. But you guys understand that deal. We're not trying to grow up a bunch of AA Nazis out there walking lockstep doing ugly things in meetings. See, I'm the one that gets the emails. I just 2 hours every morning I answer emails from guys like this, and we'll go someplace, and then I'll get these emails. And go, oh yeah, we went to this meeting tonight. We really stirred them up. Don't do that. This is about unity. This is about being unified behind a common solution. We're not out there trying to get people all stirred up any more than I'm trying to stand up here and stir you up. I'm not. People say. The dead last thing I want to do is offend somebody. Scout's honor. It affects me hugely when somebody is offended by something I say. That's the reason why I'm so very careful to try to stay in the literature, to try to stay in the book. Now, if you don't agree with the book, that's your problem. I can't change that. I didn't make the message up. I'm just here carrying a message that I got out of the book. I can't change any of that. And if you're upset with that, your problem is with you in the book, not with you and me. Okay? But we want to carry that same thought process in when we're going in there and carrying into the meetings that we go into. A lot of you guys go to other meetings. You have a home group and then you go and share in other meetings, and that's just fine. It's not a problem in the world. But when you go into those meetings, be respectful, be kind, smile a lot, laugh a lot. We aren't a glum lot. And try to listen to what's going on in the meeting. See if you can carry some hope back in the meeting. It starts sliding south because somebody's saying something goofy. Drag it back. Drag it back. With a smile on your face, drag it back. And watch what happens. You may not make any progress during the course of a meeting, but after the meeting, somebody will come up to you and say, you know, that's interesting what you just said. Can you tell me blah, blah, blah? And there you are. Now you're on track. And the fellowship that you crave will grow up right around you. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And I have never, not one time have I ever seen it fail. If we'll just stay the course and enjoy each other and do the things that we're supposed to do, amazing things will happen in this fellowship. And, you know, it's so much better now than it was even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. It's just, I'd do these talks 5 years ago, guys, and I'd literally look around to see if there was a piece of rope in the room. I thought I was going to get hung for talking about big book stuff. I've had my tires cut. I've had my windshield broke. I've had some of the nastiest hate mail. My wife got in my computer one day looking for something and came across a file that I had where I kept some of those letters. And she says, how can you live with people hating you this bad? And I said, they don't hate me. They're just fearful of what they don't understand. It's not personal. And I don't take it personal. Try not to anyway. But you understand what I'm saying. The book gave us a set of instructions. Let's go follow the instructions to the letter and see what happens. And then we'll reap the rewards. We'll have a bunch of guys excited and enthused about being a member of this deal. Okay? It's hard to look at your faces and see how you're reacting to that stuff. Some younger guys get all disappointed. I said, oh, I thought we were going to get out there and kick some ass. Kick all the ass you want to, but don't tell them I told you to do it. Okay? Anybody have any question to save me again? Thank you. Anybody have any questions that we can answer? Peter will come up here too like this, and we'll be delighted to answer anything that we can. Anybody? Leslie? Okay. The question about this for the taping audience on this thing is about the nature of meetings themselves and how far we ought to go in this meeting and towards and changing the meeting back around, or whether we ought to let people just share and do whatever they want to do. It's about, I'm going to read something for you, and I think you'll get a kick out of this, and it'll answer your question, I think, specifically to what the lowdown is. This Bill Wilson, by 1960s, had come to a conclusion that things were rotten in Denmark. That's just a saying. I mean, I don't know if anything's rotten in Denmark. I don't even know where that came from. But it's just that things were going weird. And what they needed to do was try to... He and Bob were getting every message. Remember, in those days, everything good or bad in AA went straight to Bill. Everything. And so this guy is just consumed with this big old load of stuff. And what he's seeing by the 60s, by the late 60s, the discussion meeting had been included into the deal, and the meetings had fragmented a lot like what you're talking about. You've got one group over here talking about this and one group talking about this, and the whole lot of us talking about our drunk-a-log, how we got here. And so what he wrote this letter, and it had been around for a bit, and this is what it says. It's just three little short paragraphs. And he's trying to identify and lay a little piece out so that we can see what the AA group was about and what we were supposed to be doing. And it says, an AA group as such, cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone those of non-alcoholics in the world around us. Now, the AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone. Although a member may sometimes be helped in such matters by his friends in AA, the primary responsibility for the solutions of all his problems of living and growing rests squarely upon the individual himself. Now, should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. Now, here it is. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps, is the sole purpose of the group. If we don't stick to this cardinal principle, we shall almost certainly collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. See what I'm saying? According to Bill Wilson, when this was written in 1966, and nothing has changed, the sole purpose of an AA group was the teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps. The sole purpose. Not discussing our problems, not sharing all this other stuff that we want to bring in there. Is there an important time to bring that stuff in? Yes, there is. We talked about it last night. You betcha. But when thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of meetings are consumed with nothing but men and women talking about their war stories, we are wrong. We have strayed from our primary purpose. You can tell me your war story until the cows come home, but until I have a solution, Daniel, who's detoxing my meeting, he doesn't care about your war story. We've already identified. He's here. He's in the room with us. We don't need to bring him any farther. He's there. Let's gather him up. Let's hug his little neck. Let's rub his little head and tell him it's going to be okay. Give him a little noogie patrol. And then let's just tell him, this is the solution that we found, and it's spiritual in nature, and we had it because we worked 12 simple steps. Let's do that. And then the meetings, you'll see, will take on new power. They'll take on new effectiveness. And you'll see thousands of people recover that aren't recovering today. Does that answer that? Next. Yes, ma'am. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. Let's clarify something. What she's talking about, this thing, is the amends process. And then Peter can flesh this out. There may be exceptions to this, but based on what I've been taught, this process of an amends deal, we're going to make amends to people we have harmed, and the question is, how do you know you've harmed them? And then, what about people that we haven't actually physically harmed, but just said unkind things to me like this? Let me give you an example. I had a guy come up to me, he called me one night after a talk that I had done in Dallas, and he said, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such a group, and you talked there Saturday night. And I said, yep, I remember being there. And he goes, I just wanted to make an amends to you. And I said, okay, why? What happened? And he said, well, I just I told everybody out there that I hated your guts and that I thought you were pathetic. And then he told me all the other things that he said, and they were truly unkind. I mean, it was just like... Now, 3 minutes ago, I didn't even know this guy existed. I didn't even know he existed. And now I know that there's a man out there that hates me enough that he wants to do me harm. He wants to cut my genitals off, I think is how he put it. dig? This is pretty serious stuff. And now I'm feeling sort of threatened. I'm feeling kind of, you know, like this. And I'm hoping the amends process works because I don't want this fruitcake out there. You see what I'm saying? And so the question would be, so if this guy had these thoughts, how would be a better way to clear that up? Don't tell me, tell them. Go back to the group and apologize to the group for the gossip and all the unkind things that he said. There's where he screwed up. Like that. You want to flesh that out? Yeah. You can contradict me. It's okay.
I have some experience with that. First things first, you talked about the internal dialogue, the character assassination of someone, even though you didn't directly tell them. I think we all have that. We probably have some of that about me and him by the time we get out of here. But I've had that, and there was no need for me to go up and say, hey, this is the way I've been feeling about you. What I've done with things like that is make prayer for that person and make prayer that I see them as another child of God to a place of acceptance for them. And if I had bad feelings, there was jealousy attached to it or resentment, whatever it may be, that they're filled with the Spirit of God like I'm asking God to fill me with His Spirit also. All good things for them as for me. My perceptions began to change on them. What I need to also be doing with that is writing inventory on the anger I feel towards you or the jealousy I feel towards you so I can see what's bringing that about. Because if it's you today, it'll be him tomorrow. And I need the change within me. Now, when I move to, and God will determine this, I need to be careful. If I'm going to go knock on someone's door or approach like Myers had his approach, is it more ego that's doing it to say, hey, look at me. I'm really going to any lengths and causing more harm and being blind to that ego running it. Or am I truly getting moved by God to go see someone that I've slandered or gossiped about? And this is why we didn't get a chance to talk about it because of time, but seeking counsel is vital here. See, if I have a sponsor who's awake and I can say, hey, Joe, let's go over some of my amends. I have these people or this one particular person I've gossiped about terribly, and I don't know what to do with this. Not just be headstrong and go out so I can come back with another notch on my belt and say, hey, I made another amends, right? Need to seek counsel. However, if we're going to go see that person, if I've gossiped about you to Myers, before I approach you, I need to clear that up with Myers first and make amends to him for unloading that stuff on him. And when I approach you, you don't have to wonder if I went to see Myers about that because I'm going to tell you I've cleaned it up with other people I've talked about. See, so it's a healing all the way around. And then I may have to sit and listen to what you tell me about it. Now, I was doing this, and there were lots of people on my list that I had really bad feelings for. Just they would walk in a room, and I would get this thing in me that wasn't pretty. And I would do some of these practices. There was one particular gentleman where he would get to speak at a meeting, and I would go, oh, no, not again. I know his story, the same war story. I know when he did this, and when nothing changes, it goes on forever and ever and ever, and he's probably still talking somewhere, and right. And a few times I get up and walked out to show my displeasure that he's not following the AA program, according to Peter Marinelli. And what I did with that was it grows. And I would tell Joe about him and Frank about him. And, well, this guy's on my list, and I'm praying, and I see him at a meeting, and something came over me, and I approached him. First time I ever did this. And I let him know, I spoke to those other folks about it in my amends process. You know, what I said about him, I made amends to them. They thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for me. Oh, that's silly, but I had to do that. And suddenly I get moved to approach this guy. And this one particular time, he says, Pete, he says, you couldn't have done this at a better time. He says, my life is in the toilet right now. He says, I'm doubting everything. And in you doing this, you just showed some credibility for AA. And I let him know that, to see, I would quickly, this is, when I first came in, he was one of the biggest arms around me, guy. Hey, welcome, you're new. I forgot that when I started to gossip. And I let him know that I was grateful that he did that when I was new, because I was just telling someone was a bandit on an open moon when I walked in. When we got done, he was thanking me. Is this going to come at a better time? You just gave the big book AA some credibility, and I'm lost right now. He started to make some big book meetings, and it was done. But God had to decide that, and that's real. You really need to be careful, because in doing that, is it ego fueling me coming in through the back door, and am I going to cause a whole lot more harm in so doing? Very simply, also, if I've slandered some people and had some ill feelings about people, some internal dialogue, everything, turn all things into the Father of Light. Go to God. Father, fill my heart with a spirit of forgiveness. Allow me to see this person as one of your children. Someone's done some ugly things in a meeting, right? And it's easy. It's seductive to go gossip about them because it's so obvious the wrong they're doing or the wrong they're doing out there. It's so justified. Look what they're doing. I can talk about them. Well, the carpenter said, forgive them for they know not what they do. Can I do that? If someone is sick and untreated, what do I expect? A spiritual guru? So instead of gossiping, I could be praying for them. And that's what I've been able to do. Make sense? Cool. Your intent the first time through the work, following the instructions, your intent was pure to clean up the wreckage of your past. Right? And you didn't cause more harm in doing that, right? What I've experienced was that, and over the last 19 years, this we kind of grow up spiritually. And we get new teachers. And the work evolves. It gets taken to other levels, to new levels. We become much more aware. We get more information, new experiences. And each time I've gone through the work, my amends approach has changed. Follow the instructions in the book, but I've gotten even clearer. I've gotten to know, have experience with amends. My current sponsors taught me ways on how to approach prayer and how to approach amends. So it has evolved also. But the intent has always been constant to clear up the wreckage of my past, taking responsibility for the harm I've caused. And I really think when we're sitting with other people, well, I don't think, I know, when we're sitting with people and we're making amends, they don't care what book we came out of. They don't care if I have index cards or with highlighters and stars next to their name. They just want to know what we're talking about. I stole 20 bucks from you. You want the 20 bucks back. You don't care what book I read or how spiritual I am or what color index card I got. You're aware of your change, your shift. Your sponsors, and certainly God watches the whole thing and has moved you to do that. So the intent is what's important here. If someone came up to you and made a direct amends to you for some harm caused, right, and they were really sincere and you knew it, do you care if they missed a couple of little things in the book? If they were stuttering because they were so nervous? No, you're just concerned about their intent and your amends being made to you. And I'll give you the exact opposite. A guy who claimed one of these warring theologians, he had a big book under his arm, slam it down everyone's throat. When you spoke to him, you had to connect every I and cross every T in the big book, otherwise you weren't doing the big book. Became pompous and arrogant out of this way. Became a danger to his little fellowship in AA. Well, a gentleman I was sponsoring went to him to make amends, and he sought counsel with me, and we spoke, and he came back, and he was a little, kind of had this look in his face that he was kind of uneasy about things, and I said, well, what happened? And he said, I went to him, and he told me, don't come back until I follow the exact instructions in the big book, and turned away from me. And the guy was going there with a sincere attempt to make right the wrong he caused. When I'm hearing an amends, I'm really just concerned with them coming to me. They're giving me the respect to showing up. And that's what people are really concerned about. When I sat with my dad, you know, he was more concerned about me being well than anything else. Make sense? You ought to be evolving and growing up spiritually. Okay, a couple more. Yes, in the back. Yes, sir.
Okay. The question is whether or not alcoholics are particularly prone to being selfish and self-centered and other character defects associated with that. Let me answer that first. The answer is no. This may happen, but it's like he had an alcoholic personality. We hear that all the time. What is an alcoholic personality? You know, in terms of mainstream, in terms of life, alcoholic, there are 10% of us worldwide that are wired just like me and you. The mental component's there, the physical component's there, and there we are. That's what separates me from everybody else. But in every other respect, look at this room, full of brilliant men and women, who are capable of all kinds of things, full of willpower, full of everything that they out there say that we don't have. You see what I'm saying? It's just crazy. We're exactly like. Let me tell you where the rub comes in here, guys. Is when we don't understand how deadly the selfishness and self-centeredness is to start the spiritual nightmare that becomes our inner condition that the alcoholism treats. That's the reason why it's so important that we see this. Alcoholism is not an external thing; it's an internal thing. And everything that we do treats the internal condition, or should. That's the reason why I get so irritated with people talking about things in meetings. Talk. Like the talk of how bad my day's going is going to treat my internal condition. All we teach when we do that, guys, is that if we manage well, that's just what we teach the new guy. If he comes in and he shares, if he manages well, he can stay sober. And that is not what the book said. That's not what the literature said. The literature said I'm screwed regardless of how I try to manage it. That thing of trying to get the job, the girl, and the car that we were talking about last night all lined up. Guys, it's like herding cats. You get one of them going down the road, or you get two of them going down the road, you think, okay, like this, and then you get the other one all lined up, and then she leaves. You never get it all set up right. It's an illusion. You never get it the way it's supposed to be. And teaching people in meetings that we can do that by talking about the problem of the day, I think it sends the wrong message. We need to be sending the message that this is something that can be fixed spiritually. But underlying everything, remember, let's pretend for the sake of this example, and I'll be real brief. Let's pretend for the sake of the example that you are sober today. You have not had a drink. There's nothing in you. And if we could maintain this feeling for a little while, we would be okay. The problem is that driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, all of these things, our spiritual nature is being attacked from all sides. And in short order, I'm at conflict. She didn't look at me exactly the way I wanted her to look at me. And so now I've got things, the tapes are going, and I'm getting real judgmental. I'm getting real, you see what I'm saying? And pretty soon, the spiritual condition begins to reassert itself. The spiritual malady is how the book puts it. But it was driven originally by the stuff that we were talking about, the selfishness and self-centeredness, this kind of stuff. Now look, my wife is selfish and self-centered in some things, and it would drive her to do certain things, maybe healthy things like talk to a friend, talk to a preacher, go work out. You understand what I'm saying? What does it drive me to do? Drink. Because that's the only thing, because of the mental component of this thing, that's the only place my head goes. It's like I'm wired just like that. Restless, irritable, discontent, fix it right there. A quart of beer will do it. I don't think about the rape. I don't think about all the crap that happened to me. I don't think about any of that. I think about it'll fix it. It fixed it when I was 17. Thank you very much. And it'll fix it right now at 53. That's where my head goes. And that's what separates me from the other drinkers that are out there, the heavy drinkers and this kind of stuff. Is that clear? We understand on that? By the way, don't eat one of those Listerine things that he just gave you. I think I'm peaking. I grabbed one of Peter's little Listerine things like this, and my head feels like it's like, I don't know what's in that stuff, but I think I want more. I'm done. Anybody else have any questions like that? We have time for one more before we stop. She had her hand up first, sir. I'll catch you afterwards for sure. Let me answer that, and I think, because that's a great question, and it comes up all the time. A, with the advent of the internet, it's almost guaranteed that you can find somebody if you know anything about them. You can, yeah. I'm hip. The book says we could write a letter. If you could find an address, you could also write a letter. In lieu of that, I'm not a big fan of living amends, but sometimes, guys, sometimes we are simply left with no alternative but a living amends. We just simply can't do it. And it's not because we don't want to do it. Remember, willingness was key here. I'm willing to do this. I've prayed about this. I've asked God to bring this amends into my life to figure out. He needs to be greased in the skids, because sometimes I just can't do this thing. And if that's the case, I need to figure out another way to do that. And usually that stuff, this is a personal deal, but usually that stuff will come in prayer and meditation as I sit quietly with the idea of what can I do. And I'll find a family member that I could talk to, or I'll find a charity that I could donate to, or I can be kind to. There's a bunch of things that you can do. Peter may have another take on that stuff too. Did you have one? You're good? Okay. You look so crushed. Let's do that question real quick. Go ahead. Seriously, we got it. It's the easiest thing in the world, and I want to get into it right now, because I'm going to talk about it in the morning for a whole 30 or 40 minutes. That's exactly specifically what we're going to talk about, is that whole deal. When Daniel asked me to do this thing 10 months ago, what I really wanted to come and talk about was that question, and this thing about sponsorship, and this thing about our responsibility to the guy that's still out there getting his butt kicked by this deadly disease. And so tomorrow we're going to gather up all those loose ends and talk specifically about that. So for those whose butts are still alive and can feel them, we'll see you guys in the morning. Here's the plan as I understand it. We're going to meet here at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do 10, 11, and 12, and we should be done with our part by about 11:30. We'll do a little sobriety countdown and anything else Daniel wants to throw in there. We're going to finally get Daniel on the road to recovery tomorrow and get all that wrapped up. So come back. Thank you very much.